Hello, and welcome to Making Friends with Squirrels, an ADHD podcast where we talk life with neurodivergency. I'm Kat, your host and fellow ADHDer. Today, you'll hear me give you a short overview of our topic, and then we will speak with this week's guest. Here on Making Friends with Squirrels, the goal isn't really to solve the problem of distracting squirrels. Here, we just want to give a platform to everyday ADHD voices and provide a podcast that's easy to listen to and easy to find yourself nodding along with fellow ADHD experiences. Before I get started, however, if you are listening because you suspect you have ADHD, then by all means listen in. But please know that this show is in no way a form of diagnosis, nor is it a replacement for speaking with a doctor. Today, we're discussing ADHD and being diagnosed as an adult, and looking back on your earlier life and how ADHD has impacted your choices and behaviors. Diagnosing ADHD in adults is a bit more complex than diagnosing it in children, as the symptoms of ADHD manifest much differently in adults. Doctors and mental health professionals may look at your past, often asking potential ADHD adults things like, what were your grades in school? Were you frequently in trouble? Did you have trouble with organization? Do you often feel fundamentally different from your peers? Was your room always messy? In adults, doctors look for things like impulsiveness, disorganization and problems prioritizing, poor time management skills, problems focusing on a task, trouble multitasking, excessive activity or restlessness, poor planning, low frustration tolerance, frequent mood swings, problems following through and completing tasks, hot tempers, or trouble coping with stress. Living undiagnosed with ADHD can often feel draining, leaving you feeling like you're running on empty. This usually stems from feelings of inadequacy that accompany ADHD, causing a drain on personal strength, much like depression. The feeling of being different is also prevalent in people with undiagnosed ADHD. These people are often told they're lazy, not trying hard enough, or that they're not living up to their potential, much like everyone with ADHD diagnosed or non. RSD, rejection sensitivity disorder, also causes people with undiagnosed ADHD to not realize the reason behind why they feel like everyone around them is talking behind their back. People with ADHD, especially when they're unaware of their condition, often think that they're living a quote-unquote normal life, but then they often realize the harsh reality that is ADHD. Like hyperfocusing so much on one thing while your material life and relationships dissolve around you. Not being able to just get stuff done is a major issue for people with ADHD, and without the knowledge that comes with a diagnosis, a person with undiagnosed ADHD may feel as though they've fallen through the cracks somewhere, missing a step to adulthood that everyone else seems to have already taken to gain their status and successes. People with ADHD, especially undiagnosed and untreated, constantly have a feeling that they're just winging it day by day, no plan or structure, just pure chaos while they plunge forward into the day. Things like doing the dishes every day or eating when hungry can simply be forgotten when shoved to the back of a chaotic to-do list running through their minds. People with ADHD have a tendency to get bored quickly, and being undiagnosed creates a repetition of behavior. Some people work very hard at their jobs and then suddenly stop contributing as they now find the work boring and unfulfilling for their dopamine-seeking minds. Others may dive headfirst into a project only to abandon it days later. Shame is a major symptom of ADHD, and living with that shame without realizing the major impact of ADHD in your life can be crushing. While everyone with ADHD experiences these symptoms, it's important to realize the different experience that people who are unaware of their condition go through, living each day not knowing why they do the things they do or why they struggle with day-to-day life so much. Today, I have Stacy here to speak with me about her experience as being diagnosed as an adult. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. So you, obviously, were diagnosed as an adult, right?
Yes, that's right.
How old were you when you got diagnosed?
I was 36.
Man, I'm 32, so... Not knowing for that long, that's got to be a revelation when it happens.
Yeah. And I started to suspect probably about a year and a half to 2 years before I finally got diagnosed. And it was one of those things where you just kind of start being like, that's part of ADHD. Wait, that is too? Like, this explains like my entire life.
Mm-hmm. I think the internet has helped so much with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so many people, I think, probably went and sought an ADHD or autism diagnosis just because the internet helped everyone be like, wait, that's not just a me thing? Okay.
Yeah, I have a friend, actually, who I've known only via the internet for many, many years now, probably over a decade at this point. And she started a Facebook group a while back, totally unrelated to ADHD, but as part of that, she was having conversations about her experience getting diagnosed with ADHD. And I think she was probably early to mid 30s at that point, because this was a few years ago and she's younger than I am. So she went through that, and like, it was really her talking about it and then other people in the group talking about it as well, that I was like starting to put the pieces of the puzzle together and starting then to do my own research based off of that. And that's really when it started to click.
Yeah. I think I have a friend as well. She's just a little bit older than me, but yeah, last year she finally was like, okay, I'm going to a doctor, because after reading all these things, which, you know, she has a master's degree and all this stuff that you don't usually associate with people with ADHD, kind of being like, you were so successful, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, she, I never even suspected it. And she and I have been friends for forever. And then she was like, oh, yeah, I'm hella inattentive. And I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, she sounds like me.
So do you categorize yourself as inattentive ADHD?
You know, I think I'm probably more combined, and I never would have ever described myself as hyperactive until even after my diagnosis. And I started to learn about little other things and ways that hyperactivity can manifest that isn't what you would typically think of when you think of a child just running around and being physically hyperactive. And it was things like talking a lot and talking really fast, and having like really fast thoughts and not being able to control the thoughts in your head and things like that, that I was just like, all right, well, maybe it's like, it's both sides of this coin for me.
Yes, absolutely. I did an episode on hyperactivity, and the lady that came on, we were just like, because I'm combined type and she was hyperactive type. And she was just like, those days where you're just like, your brain is going a million miles a minute. And she was like, and it's like, not necessarily difficult, but you're just kind of annoyed with everybody else, because it's like, why is nobody else going this fast? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone needs to speed it up a little bit. Here we go. Come on.
Totally.
So in talking about being diagnosed, personally, I was diagnosed as a kid, and I was diagnosed way back in the 90s when it was still ADHD or ADD. And it was very, very, very uncommon. I think I was only like the first or one of the first people in my part of the world, like in my town, to be diagnosed. And, you know, it was still in this rural part of Texas, very, you know, unheard of. And then when people heard of it, of course they were like, well, that just sounds like an excuse for kids to be lazy and you know, yada yada yada. And so I was diagnosed and I grew up with it, and then I went to college and I was like, I don't need these medications, you know. They've just been like a thing I had to take, but you know, I was like, but now I'm an adult and I'm gonna apparently grow out of ADHD. And so I stopped taking meds for a long time until I hit about 30, and then I was like, you know, kind of the same. It was like rediscovering ADHD, where I'd read things online and I was like, wait, 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 this crap is still affecting me.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
it wasn't just in school. Oh no, it's still here. So, you know, now I got medicated and stuff like that. And like, oh my God, the difference has just been like, I graduated from college and got like an actual job. Like, did all these things I couldn't do all throughout my 20s because I didn't realize that the thing holding me back was my own brain.
Right.
So in discussing through that, you know, I don't know how your particular diagnosis went, you know, because I know some people go through these very intense, like really long processes to get diagnosed as an adult, which I'm sure a lot of it has to do with them trying to make sure that people aren't just drug seeking. But
mine was actually pretty simple.
Yeah, some people have it just real easy. The doctors are like, cool, sounds good.
Yeah, I lucked out. And so when I finally decided to get my diagnosis, it was just last summer, actually. And it was probably, we're not even at a year since my first appointment, which was August 5th last year. And I don't know why I remember, I just have this weird memory for trapping like dates and very specific details. But so it was probably the end of July, because it wasn't even a week between when I called and when they were able to get me for an appointment. And so I had, I originally had made an appointment with my doctor, my GP, for a physical, specifically because I wanted to discuss the possibility of ADHD. And this was supposed to, I had made the appointment in February and they were booking out till like April, but then April rolls around and the pandemic was in full swing. And so my physical got pushed and it didn't happen until July. And it was, so it was probably around this time last year that I had the physical. I went full intentions of having the conversation with her and saying, you know, I feel like I have symptoms of ADHD and this isn't something that I've really ever considered or anybody ever noticed, but here's what's happening. What are the next steps? What do I need to do to like actually figure this out? Mm-hmm. And so the day of my physical comes and I'm having conversations with her about everything else. And I totally chickened out of even bringing up the conversation. And I was like, and maybe it's in my head. And then like maybe a week after that, I had a, like just a really bad episode of like working memory lapse to the point where I was like, nope, that's it. I am finding a doctor and I'm making a call and I'm getting this appointment. And it might have been even like a too late in the day to like call an actual doctor that day. So I might have even like I found somebody via my insurance company's website. And I think I submitted a form online for them to call me the next day. And so they called me and I said, you know, this is what's going on. I want to get evaluated for ADHD. They had paired me originally with one of the psychiatrists in their practice. It's a very large practice and they actually have offices both here in New Jersey, where I live, and an office in Florida as well. And so they paired me, they were originally going to pair me with one of the doctors and they said, oh, she actually can't see you for like 2 weeks. You probably want to get in ahead of time. Here I was thinking it was going to take at least a month to get an appointment. And so they ended up pairing me with a psychiatric nurse practitioner who was available like in less than a week. And so we made the appointment and the appointment day comes. They made it very clear to me that they have a very strict no-show policy and you would have to pay for the appointment or whatever if you did not show. Well, right before, like the day before my appointment, a tropical storm came up the coast. I don't remember which one it was, but a tropical storm came up the coast. We got terrible storms, branches down. My electricity goes out and it's out. It ended up being out for 3 days, but it happened the day before my appointment. And I was like, I have to figure out how to get on this Zoom meeting because they weren't seeing people in person because of the pandemic. I was like, I have to get on the Zoom. Also, I have to work and I can't work at home with no electricity, no internet or anything. So I ended up going to a friend's house to work for the day and go out on her deck to take the Zoom call from my phone with the nurse practitioner. I end up losing the connection in the middle of it. And she calls me back and she's like, it's okay. I've seen you in person now for like 20 minutes. We can just continue the rest of it on the phone, which was very cool and made it easy. But I'm like stressing out. My friend's father-in-law is downstairs in the backyard. I'm like, I don't know what he's hearing, if he can hear anything, but if so, he's getting my entire like psychological background and history here. And so, yeah, it was very simple. She ran through a whole bunch of, you know, questions in a very typical kind of questionnaire format of, do you experience all of these things? Or like, to what extent do you experience these things? And so we went through that. And then we just had conversations about my experiences in general. And at the end of it, she was like, yeah, you definitely show symptoms of ADHD. Are you open to treating it with medication? And I was like, look, this is why I am finally seeking a diagnosis, because it's gotten so bad that I don't feel like I can function anymore. And I need to do something that is not, that is different than what I've been doing for the past 36 years. So yes, please, let's figure this out. And she wrote me a script and it took a little while to get the script filled because it had to go like through the pre-authorization process and whatever. But within a week, I had my first prescription and we went from there. It took about 3 to 4 months until we finally like settled on a dose that was actually working. Mm-hmm. But it's just, incredible what a difference that has made. Yeah, for me, it was being able to focus more at work, which is kind of the thing that got me looking into a diagnosis in the first place. And before I even had these conversations with that friend that was recently diagnosed, was just, I started a new job in 2018. And by the fall of 2019, I was working from home part time because I was doing some classes for a volunteer thing that I needed to train for. And so I was working from home the day that I had classes. And I found that working from home was making it really hard for me to focus on things and like stay paying attention. And I could have a call with my boss. And like, fortunately, we only do like voice calls. We rarely turn our video on. So I could be having a call and I could be completely spaced out and having to have her repeat things or in like a meeting and just sitting there and like just completely lost in space and doing so many other things that, you know, and thinking back, even when I know I was in the office, and now it's been so long since I've been in the office because I'm still working from home. I went back to the office very little before the pandemic because of an injury. So then I had to work from home for a month. I went back for a few days and the pandemic started. And so I've been working from home basically at least part-time for almost 2 years. And so I realized that even in the office, I would have moments like that where we'd be in meetings and people would be talking. And I don't know if I looked like I was spaced out, but I know that my brain was elsewhere. And it was like, I'd be sitting there and it's like, almost an outer body experience where you're sitting there and I know that I'm thinking about something else and I catch it and I'm somehow now a separate entity realizing that I'm out there and trying to pull myself back in like, hey, no, you need to put your attention over here. There's people speaking, you know, tune back into this meeting. And it's very strange to have that kind of like, you know, be at odds with yourself that way. And it took me until I was working from home and it started getting worse that I realized that this has been happening for a long time. And so I was like, I know I had somebody that I was in our church when I was a teenager and that my mom was good friends with, who she had ADHD, and my mom always called it adult ADHD or whatever. And I'm assuming because she was probably diagnosed as an adult, but I never really spoke with her about it. And so I was like, does it, like, can you get adult onset ADHD? Is that a thing? And so I start researching it and it's like, no, that's not a thing. Generally, you have it your entire life. And I was like, well, I was never diagnosed with it. So I don't, maybe it doesn't apply, but like, you know, I can't focus. I'm having all these issues with memory. Like, I'm too young to have dementia. Like, I don't understand what's going on. And that's when my friend was going through the process of getting diagnosed and she was sharing all this stuff. And I was like, oh, so memory's a part of it too. And like all these other things. And now I'm thinking back to childhood and like all these things from there and just other situations in the past. And I'm like,
yeah,
it's all coming together and starting to make sense. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's not adult onset. It's just somehow no one ever picked it up.
Yeah. And of course, you know, you're, you know, female and they often get overlooked because then, you know, we always consider ADHD to be little rowdy boys that are running around and can't sit still. And
yeah. You know what I thought was funny? And I think it's also part of the name. And so whether you call it ADD or ADHD, whichever, I think it gets this, you know, people say, okay, you have a deficiency in paying attention and or you're hyperactive. And those are the two components of this disorder. And so if I can't identify those specifically, then it doesn't apply to you. And I think the name does it such a disservice because there's so much beyond those three words there, attention deficit hyperactivity, that people are not going to see on the surface. And if you have a very high level, awareness of ADHD, that's just what you think of. And you don't realize there's all this like executive function stuff and all these underlying things as well. And so what I thought was I'm gonna say funny. I don't know, funny, sad, kind of more than funny, haha. But like, so my mom was, she was not a psychologist or psychiatrist or trained in the field in any sort of way, but she did a lot of reading about mental health and different things. And like I said, she had this friend who had ADHD, and she, I guess she did a whole bunch of research on it as well. And so she was always kind of pointing out that maybe this person has ADHD or that one has ADHD, like my friends and my brother's friends or whomever, because they may have talked a lot or they've been, or, you know, are always running around and being very obviously hyperactive, or just not paying attention to what they're doing or what is being said, or when you're talking to them, you can tell they're spacing out. And never once did she think that maybe it might apply to me, because she never said anything to me, never tried to get me diagnosed. I don't know if she just didn't recognize that in me. I wasn't necessarily someone, like I said, who was always running around and being physically hyperactive. I could be shy, but when I talked a lot. I also talked very fast. And I don't know, you're a little bit younger than me, so I don't know if you remember the show Blossom, but there was a character on there, Six, who talked super, super fast. And I always thought I was just like her because I would talk that fast. And I've actually been rewatching that show, and it brings me great joy to see that and like go back and relive through that. But yeah, so she was always like identifying little things in other people. And I'm like, all right, but I'm also spacing out while we're having conversations. I'm also not paying attention to things. I'm literally walking into walls because I'm doing five things, or my brain's in other places, and I don't realize that I'm taking this corner too short. And you know, this happens regularly, and that seems a little odd, you know. And she would always be telling me that I needed to be more mindful and pay attention to what I'm doing and pay attention to the details. And it would always be a struggle for things like cleaning my room. And she would tell me that I have selective listening because, you know, I wasn't paying attention to her when she told me that I needed to get up and go clean my room. And I was paying attention. I heard her. I knew it had to get done, but I wasn't like, I don't know if it was not wanting to do it or not being able to like get up and do it. I don't like, it's hard to go back and try and identify that as it was happening 20, 30 years ago. I know now from like more recent times, there have definitely been times where I'm sitting around, I'm like, I need to clean this place. And I find it like just almost like there's something just physically holding me back and unable to like actually get up and do the thing. And I just thought it was because I worked so much and I was just tired on the weekends from working so much and exerting so much brain power and all this. And I'm tired. I have no energy. And so, yeah, of course, I don't want to get off the couch on the weekends and clean the house. And, you know, now I'm thinking like, oh, it's other things, because now I'm medicated and I'm like, okay, I'm still working just as hard as I was before. And I'm still, you know, I can feel that sense of energy being zapped, but I also am much more capable now of on the weekends being able to get up and clean the apartment, or, you know, like you were saying, do the dishes and make sure they're put away, or even like at the end of the day, do some stuff around the house and take care of things and function that way, which was not something even a few years ago that I was able to really do. And I just didn't realize that it was more than just being tired.
Yeah. It really is like astounding to be like, I think one of the things that I actually talked about earlier in this episode during the intro is a lot of the ways that people who have undiagnosed ADHD kind of like the ways that it tends to manifest the most. And I put that living with undiagnosed ADHD can, like, the big things were that it can feel very draining. You know, like same thing where you feel like you're running on empty. And a couple of the sources and papers that I read talked about how it mostly comes from feelings of inadequacy that accompany ADHD, because, you know, much like depression and stuff, it has this real drain on you where it's just like, if you have this common, especially, you know, because anxiety and depression are very much comorbidities of ADHD. And it's like, especially if you're depressed and you also have ADHD and they combine into this RSD depression funk that you just kind of spiral in. And even if you're doing well on the outside, you know, like internally it's going on constantly, and it just really tends to drain all of your energy and your feeling to do anything. And you don't realize that that's not normal because it's all you've lived through.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that, because like when I started to learn, even before I learned about ADHD, I started to see some folks on Facebook posting about executive dysfunction. And I was like, oh, that sounds a lot like what I'm dealing with. And they were posting about it in the capacity that it pertains to depression. And I've dealt with depression in the past, and I didn't feel like I was necessarily dealing with depression. And I was like, maybe it's just like really, you know, chronic mild depression, and that's how it's manifesting itself. You know, and when I did have that appointment with the NP, she did diagnose me with depression and anxiety as well as ADHD, which I know I've had anxiety my entire life. That wasn't a surprise. And depression, I was like, I mean, maybe, I guess. And I'm still kind of like on the fence because I just don't really feel that way. But I also am medicated, so maybe like I don't feel that way because I'm supposed to not feel that way because I'm on medication. Or maybe I just wasn't really, like, it's, you know, mild and has kind of gone away. I've lost track of where I was going with this.
You're fine. Completely. It's very much, like I said, the combination of just kind of mental health in general and ADHD. I think also, at least for me, when I was kind of like, quote unquote, rediscovering ADHD, this, you know, and I think a lot of people describe it, even people that were diagnosed as children, it's just that feeling of being different, you know, very prevalent in people with, you know, with ADHD in general, but especially undiagnosed ADHD, you know. And it's that whole thing of, you know, being told, either being told or internalizing and telling yourself, you know, that you're lazy, you're not trying hard enough, you're not living up to your potential, all that kind of stuff that makes you just feel like you're like, you know, why don't I function the way that everybody else seems to function? And I think for a lot of people, that is one of the main triggers that gets them started on the whole, you know, path towards getting diagnosed, because you just get kind of sick and tired of being like, I don't know why life is so hard for me.
Well, and the thing is, I don't think I ever particularly thought that life was hard for me, or that things were hard in general. I always did well in school, honestly, without really having to try very hard. There were certain things that were not my forte. I was not great with reading comprehension. Well, that makes sense. If I can't focus on reading something, if my mind is always wandering, yeah, okay, maybe my comprehension was off there. And I have some very explicit memories of my aunt buying like workbooks for me over the summer. I think I was maybe like 8 or 9, because she just wanted to keep us doing work during the summer so we didn't learn what we lost during the school year. And I was always so resentful of those damn workbooks and the reading comprehension in particular, because I was just, I just didn't want to be doing those. And I love to read. You could find me like curled away, you know, staying up way too late, reading like Babysitter's Club books or the Sleepover Twins books or something like that. I loved to read. But when it came to like actually retaining information for purposes of regurgitating that information and being able to answer questions about it in an academic setting, that was always more difficult for me. Timed tests, not like just like you go into school and you have a 30-minute or 45-minute class period to do a test. But like in third grade, very specifically, we had math tests that were maybe like 30 questions of, you know, it was addition or multiplication or whatever it was that week. And we had 5 minutes to complete these 30 questions, and it was way too much pressure. And that I hated. But in general, I didn't really find that I had to try very hard to get good grades until, you know, there were some subject changes, like when I started doing algebra or calculus, those came a little bit more difficult. And there were certain subjects where I was like, you know, like an okay student, but not a great student like I was in other subjects. And then I realized that if I studied a little bit more, I could actually get even better grades. And I was like, oh, well, now I have to apply myself because I learned that if I do, I can do better. But so that was never really an issue for me. And I went, you know, I was an honors student. I was on the dean's list in college. I graduated college in 3 years. Then I took a year off, and within 9 months, I was like, I'm bored, because my friends were still in school. So I was just going to work, going to the gym, and coming home. And I was like, I'm going to go back to grad school now. And I applied to grad school. And so I started grad school the following year after I had graduated college, did that for 3 years. And so by 25, I was done with school. I had 4 years of work experience under my belt because I went part-time to school. And I had my MBA, and I've had a successful career. So by all means, somebody looking at me wouldn't necessarily think that I've struggled. And I never particularly felt like I struggled until I started to get promoted at work. And I think that was at first. So that was probably about 10 years ago now, when I first made that jump into a managerial position. And that's when things started to get a little bit more tricky. And it was just because there's like a lot of balls in the air and a lot of different things to juggle. And it was okay. That first role, I had a really great boss. After that, I ended up in a job that was constantly, like, it had a lot of turnover in terms of my bosses. And then I ended up with a boss that was really toxic. And then that really was a struggle. And so I think, you know, yeah, like that was a struggle in dealing with him. And that's where the RSD started to come in too. And all of a sudden I had, like, you know, the imposter syndrome just started to grow and grow even more. And I think that's what it was in the beginning too. When I first got promoted, is like, oh, they promoted me. Oh wait, am I really this good? I feel like I'm not living up to their expectations. And I feel like I'm not doing what they want me to do, or doing it as well as they would want me to do it. But then with him in particular, because there was a whole lot of other things at play from that end, where I feel like he was even gaslighting me at times. And I was like, there's something more going on here, but that just kind of exasperated the RSD. And then when I left that, that's where I got into my job now. And I'm in a great place in terms of the people that I work with, and I have great bosses and all of that, but it still left me with this RSD and this imposter syndrome of, am I really living up to doing all the work that I'm supposed to be doing and doing it well, how they expect of me? And that's kind of been, you know, it's been progressively difficult, I'd say, in those past 10 years.
Yeah, you know, RSD is a big, huge thing that causes people that are undiagnosed to, you know, not realize the reason why they feel like everyone around them is talking about them behind their back. I need to get a medication. I think I need to get a dosage increase, because it was just today that my boss was in my coworker's office right next to me, and they were just like talking and talking and talking. And then suddenly they started talking quiet. And of course, my brain was like, they're talking about me. They're talking quiet because they don't want me to hear. And then I was like, they have no reason to be talking about me whatsoever. But I was freaking out, being just like, what are they saying? What did I do? Why are they like this?
Yeah. So that first promotion that I got, and where I told you I had a great boss, and she was really a good mentor and very supportive. And, you know, I'd worked for her for about a year and a half before I got that promotion. And then I was in that role for about 3 years. And actually the reason that I left was because of her. And so there was one morning, again, this was like around this time of year, I don't know what it is with this July, August timeframe, but that she had pulled me aside. And we had run into each other, like, just whatever. And she was like, oh, I mean, I need to talk to you all day. Do you have a few minutes? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And now I'm feeling like, oh no, something terrible has happened. And what she actually said to me was, you know, you've been doing a good job, and I really think you deserve like a raise and a promotion, but I don't know when I'm going to be able to give that to you. However, this sister company that we had been working with, their person in this other role had just left. I'm purposefully being a little bit vague because I don't want to give too much information about all that, but he was leaving. And so I'd like to recommend you for this role, which would have been a promotion and a raise and stuff. And it was great. I got it. And that's why I ended up moving, and how I eventually, even though it was a little rocky, got to where I am now and doing great. But my thinking was, oh, she's just trying to get rid of me. She really doesn't like the work that I've been doing. And this is just a nice way to get me out of this role and move this other person that she likes better into my role. And to this day, I still kind of believe that, that when I first got onto medication, I was just like, I'm not hungry. And all of a sudden I can get super focused and start hyper focusing on what I'm doing. And the day has gone by and I'm like, oh, I didn't eat lunch today. Like, that's really weird. And so it wasn't until I was medicated that I actually started forgetting to eat or just being comfortable not eating. And that actually for me brings up other issues because I, you know, I have a history of disordered eating. And so, and while I was never like specifically diagnosed as anything, you know, there were definitely periods in my life where I was going through like binge eating episodes and things like that and yo-yo dieting and all this stuff. And so the idea of like skipping meals, even though it wasn't purposeful and it was like because of this medication, that started to kind of give me a little bit of anxiety that I would start to get back into this diet centric mode and this thinking of like this diet culture kind of thing. Or somehow take me down that road back to a disordered eating or get me back into that mental phase. And it hasn't really, but it's something I'm also like specifically trying to keep an eye on so that I don't go down that road. But that was the one thing that was weird for me is that like that was never an issue until I was medicated. In terms of like not feeling like an adult, yes. But I have to say, I have heard several people who I like to call them, you know, adultier adults. And that basically means people like in my parents' generation, but like who will say similar things who I don't think, you know, I think they're probably neurotypical. I wouldn't imagine that they have ADHD or anything like that. And I've heard this from so many different people that they just kind of never feel like an adult. And so I'm like, well, maybe that's just a universal thing. But there's definitely times where I'm like, I don't know how, you know, somebody lets me have a driver's license or like, how am I the person that's taking care of all these things? Though I can't really say that it's like, because I didn't have a plan for things. I love to plan. I love to make plans. I love to pretend I'm organized. Like I can make tons of lists. I love spreadsheets. I love having the pretty colored post-its and highlighters and things all over the place. But then I never follow the plans. And that was the issue. And I think I described it just like that when I was getting diagnosed. And she was like, oh, are you organized? And I was like, well, I don't know. What do you mean? Because I can do all these things and make this whole thing look like I'm really organized. But then I can't actually execute it or follow through on that organization. And I think that was part of her going, yeah, okay, that definitely is ADHD. But yeah, so it wasn't really like planning is not the problem. It's like actually following through on the plans and going through that. So,
yeah, it's very, very classic ADHD. So many people that I have spoke with while doing this podcast have did the same thing where they're like, oh, my God, I love being organized until I have to follow the plan. Right. Like it's so fun to do the organization part and then you have to be like, oh, now I gotta like do it and keep up with it.
But let me tell you, that's one of the things that's like great to get into a position where you're like, if it's work related, at least professionally, like great to be in a position where you're leading a team, because then you can come up with, you can design the system that you want and delegate it to other people to actually execute it. And so I don't know that that's ever necessarily happened, because I don't know if I've gotten to a place where I'm like, okay, now this is ready to like actually roll out in many cases. But that's definitely like, it's great. Like this is a whole big thing. Now I need to just find somebody to actually do it.
Yes, exactly. It's a fun way to go through life. Well, we kind of touched on all of the major ways that, you know, adult manifest or adult ADHD kind of manifests as far as I've written them down. So if you want, we can go through these five questions now if you're ready.
Sure.
Okay. So what do you think are the biggest ways that ADHD has or does impact your everyday life?
I think it's what we just talked about is kind of the inability or the lesser ability to actually execute on plans. And I can make, you know, great plans, even little things, like things that would be fun, like saying, oh, I'm going to go to the beach this weekend. And then the weekend rolls around and I was like, I don't want to get out of bed. And like, there's probably gonna be traffic and I don't want to do this. And even though it's something fun that I do want to do, it's just like too much to actually get up and go do it.
Yeah, I love planning vacations, but actually implementing vacations is a different thing. Let's see here. How do you feel about having ADHD? Like, does it represent something positive or negative to you?
I feel pretty neutral about it, actually. And I don't know why. I've heard so many people have so many different feelings about it. And I don't know if it's just because I lived with it for, you know, so long. Without knowing it was a thing or that it was there, that I just kind of got used to, like, this is just the way I function. And now I have a name for it, but it doesn't really change me or who I am. And so I don't really feel positive or negative about it. It's just kind of there. I appreciate having a diagnosis though, because I appreciate that it's at least like, it explains why I have felt certain things or why I am the way I am or do certain things a certain way. But other than that, it's just kind of neutral.
And I think my favorite thing about being diagnosed is you get like a really fun community out of it. So
yeah, that's true.
Especially online, it's a blast.
Yeah, there's definitely a few groups that I'm part of online that are just really great people and have shed so much light, and there's so much support out there, and that has been really great.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the positive things, is it's just you know, ADHD people get along really well with other, you know, neurodivergent right. people. It's just how it is. So how do you think that ADHD prepared you for the quote unquote real world?
I don't know that it did, because like I was saying earlier, that I always managed to do well in school without really trying. I think if anything, that kind of hindered things, because, you know, I would procrastinate, but I would still get good grades and get the project done or whatever. And so it just kind of reinforced that I could keep those habits that maybe aren't necessarily so great and still manage to get by. And I think in that way, it didn't really prepare. It did a disservice, if anything. I would love to be able to get things done early and not be waiting till last minute. And I feel like even when I do start to do something early ahead of schedule, somehow it still ends up at the last minute is when it gets finished.
Yeah, exactly. Like even when you're medicated, it doesn't like make your life, while it is life changing, it's not like you turn into a different person. Like,
right.
You're still going to have the habits you have, and you still do have to fight executive dysfunction. Like, it doesn't go away, and hyperactivity doesn't go away. They just become more manageable. But yeah, that kind of leads us on to number four, which is, what do you think that your life would be like if you didn't have ADHD?
I feel like I'm not great at answering these questions, but again, like I have no idea, because it's just, I can't imagine any other way, because I just went through life being like, this is my life for so long without knowing that there was something else to be different. And so I don't know, maybe it would be a little bit boring. I've always got stuff going on in my head, random questions coming up to answer, or, you know, different songs to keep me entertained. And so maybe it would be a little less, maybe a little bit more boring without it. But, you know, I don't really know.
Yeah, that's fine. I think a lot of people that I've asked a question to don't necessarily struggle with it, but I do think they all kind of take a pause, because it is kind of hard to be like, well, I don't know, because I always have had it. Like, you know, I don't know all the ways that it impacted my life, you know, in the good and the bad. And, you know, my biggest thing that I always say is, I'm like, you know, I feel like if I didn't have ADHD, or if I had treated it better, that, you know, I would have graduated the first time I went to college, And for me, that's always the thing that I tend to think back on. But, you know, for me, that's like a, you know, like a regret in my life. So it's not like it's technically just an ADHD thing. It's just kind of a general looking back on your life thing.
Yeah. Well, can I tell you that, like, because you bring that up, I actually think that the reason I ended up going to grad school when I did was because of my ADHD. And at that time, that was 2006. So that was that was 14 years before I was diagnosed. Yeah. Wow. So I mean, but the reason was because I had, and it's probably the reason I graduated early, because I had a friend who, we both had AP credits. She had, like, I think 18. And so she decided she was going to graduate in 3 years because she was going to take some summer classes to fill in, the extra credits that she needed to make it a full semester that she was missing. And I had 15. So that was like a full semester's worth. So I was like, all right, well, if you're going to do it, I'm going to do it too. And it was like that little competitive edge. And she's still like a great friend of mine. I talk to her all the time. We travel together. But it was kind of like she was doing it. So I was like, well, then I can do it too. And so I graduated a year early. And then, like I said, all my friends were still in school. And so I was coming home after work and I was just like, bored. And so one day I was like, I'm bored. I think it's time to go to grad school. And literally the next afternoon, I stopped on my way home from work and picked up GMAT books so I could start studying for the GMAT. I took it, and the GMATs, for anybody who don't know, it's a standardized test that you take for business school applications. And then I took it 2 months later and I applied to literally one school because it was the best part-time program in the country. And it happened to be reasonably close to where I was. And so I knew that I could maintain a full-time job and do this program part-time because it was specifically designed for that. And I said, if I don't get in, then it wasn't meant to happen now. And I got in and I started. And so it was February when I decided that I was going to go to grad school and September when I started. So, and I really, looking back, think that was just the impulsivity of ADHD. And so now I have ADHD, I think, to thank for the six-figure debt that I incurred from going back to grad school. So,
yes, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You get good and bad out of it.
Yeah.
Then what are some ways that you found to work around, like to make life with ADHD a little bit easier? The example that I always give, which I'm sure anybody that actually listens to the podcast is sick of me explaining it every episode. But the example I always give is I found a Tumblr post a while back, which kind of inspired me to start the podcast, where a woman is talking about how she discusses in this post about how she knows with her brain and the way it works. She's like, I know that when I wash the laundry, it's not going to get put away. You know, she's like, I can wash the laundry and then one day I can fold the laundry and put it away. She's like, but they will never happen at the same time. It's just not going to be. So she's like, so instead of fighting myself and being like, this is how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to wash the laundry and then you're supposed to put it away. She's like, instead of fighting it and being like, you're not doing it right. She's like, I just got 3 baskets. Because, you know, the struggle, my husband and I do this exact same thing where it's like you wash the laundry, you put it on the bed. You know, work all day, you finally go to bed at night and you're like, I'm way too tired to put away all this laundry. So you move it to a chair or something like that. And then the next day you put it all back on the bed so you can dig through the laundry for something. And it just goes back and forth between the bed and the, you know, chair for a few days and bits fall on the ground. And she's like, eventually you're just like, I don't know what's dirty. I don't know what's clean. And you throw it all in the washing machine and it just starts all over again. So she was like, for me, instead of fighting this system, she's like, I got 3 baskets. And she's like, one of them is for dirty. She's like, one of them is for clean. And one of them is for mystery because we don't know if it's dirty or clean. And she's like, she was like, you know, that way, you know, I have the clean clothes. The next day, if I can get around to it, I'll dump those out and I'll put them all away. If not, we're going to have to dig through that basket. But at least we know that basket of clothes is clean. And so I was just like, man, that is such an excellent way to be like, instead of being like, you're not doing it the right way. You're not doing it how it's supposed to be done. Instead of just being like that, being like, fuck it. I know what I'm like. I'm going to do it the way that my brain is going to adapt to it. And I was just like, man, that's so handy. You know, like my trick that I usually give that I do is if I have to take a lunch to work, I have to go put my keys on the lunch in the fridge. because otherwise I will not remember it. And then if I can't drive my car, can't, you know, you don't have my keys, can't drive my car. So then I'll be like, oh, right, lunch, keys. So do you have any kind of like little tricks that
I've got a few. So, and actually you mentioned the laundry. And so before you were saying that you knew your medication was working because you were able to do the dishes. The thing that changed for me that I really noticed now is that I get my laundry done in one setting. And so I, when it comes out of the dryer, I take it and I fold it and it goes away and it's all done. And that has been pretty consistent since I've been on medication. And that has truly been like, wow, how did that happen? But in terms of like little hacks, so my, before I started working from home, even part-time, you know, there would be times where I would bring my laptop home just in case I needed it or if I planned on working in the evening or whatever, but it was always a problem because I was afraid I was going to forget it. And then when I started working from home, especially part-time, I know I need to bring it home one day, but I would need to like, because I was going to be working from home the next day. And so what I did was basically I downsized to one bag. And this happened after forgetting my laptop a couple of times. And so one time, even though I had left the laptop bag hanging on the door handle, I still left without it. I got on my train. I got to Hoboken, New Jersey. So I live like in the suburbs and I take the train to Hoboken and then I take another train into New York City. And so I got all the way to Hoboken. I got on that second train. And before the doors closed, I said, oh, my God, I don't have my laptop. And I got off the train. I texted my boss and I was like, I got all the way halfway. Like, I got almost all the way to work. Realized I don't have my laptop. I'm going home. But by the time I get home, it's going to be too late to like commute. So I'm working from home today when I get back. And then another time I left my laptop on the train on my way home on a Friday night. So I couldn't get a hold of Lost and Found or anybody all weekend. And so I'm fretting about this all weekend. And then it never showed up. I had to go into work on Monday morning and tell my bosses in IT that I lost my laptop on the train. And after that, I said, I'm using one bag. I'm not.
Yes.
I am not taking a purse and a laptop bag and then maybe having a lunch bag, too. Everything goes into one place. I have a backpack and it has enough space in the backpack that there's a spot for my laptop. There's another pouch where I can either put just my wallet or I can put a small purse if I want to grab at lunch, just take that purse and run out. I can put that there. But I'm just taking this backpack because then I know I can't leave home without it because I won't have my keys or anything that I need. And I won't feel like I have everything by throwing a purse over my shoulder when truly I'm missing all these other things. So it was consolidating things into one place and one thing that I knew had to leave the house with me every day. So that was one. Another one that I found recently, and this happened right around the time I was starting medication and had been diagnosed. So maybe this had a little bit to do with it as well, but I started, towards the end of last summer planning to move. And so I moved in March when my lease was up. But I knew that I was going to move by like the end of August last year. And I made this huge giant spreadsheet, of all the things that needed to get done because I knew that there was a lot of junk in my apartment that I didn't want to take with me and just store in a new apartment if it wasn't something that I wanted. And so I finally forced myself to deal with the years of things that I had accumulated that just needed to get thrown out or needed to be sorted through. My mom passed away in 2014 and I still had some of her stuff that I've been meaning to get like appraised and sold and all of that stuff. And so I made this huge giant list. And what I did in it was I saw myself like arbitrary deadlines. And so sometimes I met them, sometimes I didn't, but it kind of helped keep me on track just knowing that it had a date against it. But what really helped was I also assigned it an energy level. And so I rated every task from 1 to 5. 1 meeting, I can do this even after the worst day because it's not going to take that much time and it's not going to take that much energy to throw, you know, a shelf's worth of books into a box. And right. 5 being, this is going to take all day and everything that I have to go through this closet and figure out what to do with all this shit. So, sorry, can I curse? figure out what to do with all this. So, and so that's a 5. And so then I was able to go through that spreadsheet and be like, all right, I know I've been working all day. I don't have that much energy right now. Let me look at my 1s and see what I can do. Or it's a Saturday. I'm feeling great. I know I have all day and nothing planned today. Let me look at my 4s and my 5s. and pick a project that's going to take a little bit more time because I have more time to do that today. And so assigning it that kind of like energy level and that time level kind of idea, that really helped to pick out things. Otherwise, I would have just said, oh, I have this giant task of moving and all these things that need to get done. And it takes so much energy. And it would have been like the week of the move. And I would have just thrown it all in boxes and moved everything to the new place and been just figuring out where to store everything.
Right, exactly. I think that's brilliant, rating things by, because that's the hardest part with executive dysfunction, right? Is being like, you know that you need to tidy up the living room or whatever, and you're like, it's gonna take me like 5 minutes. Like, just do it and get it done, and then you have a nice clean living room and you'll feel better and everything will look better and, you know, all this stuff. But your brain is just like, nah. Not doing that.
Yeah.
That sounds too hard. So yeah, giving yourself tangible things to be like, you know, you can do this. It's a one, as you know, and then knowing when you need to be prepared to be like, this day is a five. Like, it's brilliant. That's a good one.
Well, and it's great too, because then you check off that one and you're like, you know what? Maybe I can handle another one. And you check, and it gives you like this momentum because there's so much satisfaction in just checking off that it's been done. I also put two sets of check boxes so I could check when it was started and when it was completed, because then I could see like, not that just these things were looming, especially like on the bigger tasks that took time. I could be like, all right, I started this. I know that it's in progress and it's not like I've just been letting this sit for all this time. I'm making progress towards the end goal. Versus just waiting till the end to cross it off. It's like, oh, that's just looming, you know, over there and it's got to get done. And oh my God, I've been doing nothing, even though like you have, but it feels like you haven't because it's not done yet.
Yes, exactly. So I think, like I said, I think that's brilliant, but that was the last of our questions. And so, yeah, if we're ready, do you have anything else you want to discuss?
I don't think so. I think we have touched pretty much on everything.
Right. It went good, really well.
Yeah.
Do you have any like social media or anything you'd like to shout out?
I have started a voiceover business. And so that's not quite yet on social media, but the website is sassysoundvo.com if anybody wants to check it out.
Nice. Well, good job with that one. That sounds fun. I always wanted to do voiceover work. Well, yeah, otherwise everything went really good. Thank you so much for coming on and speaking with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It was really good. I think that was really good. A really good talk today. I've only had one that I was like, I feel like we're not vibing, but everyone else has been great. Which I think was more my fault because I was so tired when I did it. But
yeah.
It's the only time I had.
Well, folks, thanks for listening to this episode of Making Friends with Squirrels, an ADHD podcast where we talk life with neurodivergency. If anything in this episode has given you cause to think that you may have ADHD, please seek out a professional for diagnosis. Today's episode was researched, produced, and hosted by me, Kat. Our guest today was Stacy Sotomayor. Find her voiceover business at sassysound.vo. The music for this podcast is written, performed, and produced by Brady Candy of JBG Studio Works. Follow the show on all the socials. For Facebook and Instagram, search Making Friends with Squirrels. The Twitter handle is MFWS Podcast. Stay safe, stay kind, and don't forget, those squirrels are friendly. You just gotta make them a friend.